Well, thanks everyone for sticking around on this last full day, and thanks to Anne and Jay and Javier for inviting me to participate. It's been a great symposium so far, and I've learned a lot. I'd first like to acknowledge some of my co-authors. I'm part of a large group across the country who is working on these sort of genes to ecosystems problems. And as you can see, they're from lots of different places, and these include molecular geneticists, quantitative geneticists, chemists, community ecologists, entomologists, and microbial ecologists, and biogeochemists, and so it's a large group. And as Hillary Clinton says, it takes a village, and in the case of doing genes to ecosystem research, it certainly does. So, one of the key issues of my talk today is that plant chemistry is an important factor linking communities and ecosystems. And so to everyone in this room, that's probably no big surprise. We know that that plants have particular genetic architectures that can code for particular types of chemistry, whether it's primary chemistry or secondary chemistry, and those can either directly affect ecosystem level processes or indirectly through the activities, by affecting the activities and the composition of the microbial community. And so it's this sort of interface that I'm sort of, my work has been focused on for the number of years. And a second key issue of the talk today is that above and below ground linkages are evident across lots of different scales. And so ecosystem ecologists have appreciated for a really long time that differences in plant functional groups and differences in plant species can have very specific impacts on ecosystem level processes such as carbon and nitrogen cycling and productivity and things like of that nature. But recent reductions in biodiversity and the changes in genetic diversity that have come along with that have really resulted in a large upsurge of research in just the last 5 to 10 years. And thinking about the impacts of genetic variation, and even more specifically genotypic variation, and even specific plant genes on ecosystem level processes and nutrient cycling. And that's the primary focus of this work that I'm going to share with you today. Mostly what I'm going to be talking about is sort of big picture, but large scale patterns that we've seen in our field sites in northern Utah and in Arizona. Basically, here's sort of an overview. I'm going to be talking about genetic variation at two different scales and how that affects both litter and root tissue concentrations and the community responses, both above ground and below ground, and then the ecosystem, how the ecosystem responds to this variation. And then lastly, at a couple of different scales, showing you how this might feed back to affect the fitness of the trees that have these particular traits to begin with. And so I'm using Populus as a model system for lots of different reasons. First, it's just a beautiful plant species, and Populus forests in the West are really dominant across riparian areas, across most of all of Western North America. Populus was also the first tree species to have its genome sequenced, and so we have a lot of information that is starting to be able to be tapped to think about the genetic variants and the specific genetic architectures that structure or encode for the expression of particular plant chemistries. And so the two species that I'm going to be focusing on are Populus fremontii there on the right, which is also called Fremont cottonwood, a broadleaf species. On the far left, you see narrowleaf cottonwood or Populus angustifolia. And Fremont cottonwood occurs at low elevations. Narrowleaf cottonwood occurs at high elevations. Where their distributions overlap, they hybridize, like a lot of the salicaceous plants. That F1 hybrid, for the most part, you can force it to do otherwise, but generally, it only back crosses towards the narrowleaf parent. And so you get a case of unidirectional introgression in which you can trace in the movement of Fremont marker alleles from 100% Fremont all the way down to zero or 0% Fremont in the pure narrowleaf cottonwood. And so what we've been able to see is that there's this negative relationship between the proportion of Fremont marker alleles and condensed tannin concentrations. So on the y-axis we have condensed tannins, and on the x-axis we have the proportion of Fremont marker alleles, and these are neutral AFLPs. And you can see that there's this striking sort of pattern that if you're a Fremont cottonwood, you have very low concentrations of condensed tannins. If you're an F-wood hybrid, which is about 50% of Fremont alleles since it's an F1, you're sort of intermediate. And then if you are a backcross hybrid or a narrowleaf cottonwood, there's a whole lot more variation, but the concentrations can be quite high in terms of the overall amount of dry weight condensed tannin. And we know then that this condensed tannin is a quantitative trait within this larger group of species. So again, on the right, you can see the averages for the different cross types. And we have done manual crosses about 10 years ago. There's a molecular geneticist in our group who did a series of crosses to create a mapping population. And so using QTL interval mapping, so quantitative trait loci interval mapping, Scott Woolbright has been able to show that there are specific regions of the gene, of the populace genome, that are associated with tannin production. And candidate gene analysis most recently has indicated that there are 8 potential candidate genes that represent 6 enzymes in the condensed tannin pathway. So this is Scott's work is building on Cy et al.'s work from 2006, which has become possible again because of the existence of the populace genome. And so then we can see that there is genetic variation for this trait. And so this figure demonstrates both percent condensed tannins in the top panel and then the condensed tannin to nitrogen ratio in the bottom panel for 5 different genotypes across these 4 different cross types. And you can see again very low concentrations for the Fremont and F1 hybrids, and then much higher concentrations of tannins as we move towards narrowleaf cottonwood. But not only do these species vary quantitatively in condensed tannins, but they also vary qualitatively. And this is some recent work that has been done by Anne's group. And what she's found, she and her students have found that the Populus fremontii and F1 hybrids are very different structurally from the narrowleaf cottonwoods and the back cross hybrids. And so you can see that they differ in molecular weights, but they also differ in the number of extender units. In terms of the Fremont cottonwoods have a very small amounts of the epicatechin extender, whereas the Populus angustifolia and back cross hybrids have a lot more extenders, and they're composed of epicatechin and epigallocatechin extenders. And so they're functionally, they could be very different because they're qualitatively very different. And we found, I didn't show you all of these data, but from a quantitative standpoint, these species differ. They can be very plastic in terms of the ontogeny of the plant, the season, or the location where they're growing. But these qualitative differences, Anne's group has found, they don't vary that much, and so that this is not a very plastic trait. And so in general, our group has found that when we try to look at foliar condensed tannins and its relationships to herbivore, you know, based on that classic Feeney model, we don't find very much support for it. We find that condensed tannins don't affect foliar herbivores very frequently or very commonly. But where they are important is for herbivores or pathogens that utilize bark tissue. And so you can see on the left-hand side, this is bark condensed tannins, and this is for the number of branches taken by beaver in this system. And so this was an experimental setup where you take branches that are of lots of different types of genotypes that have various concentrations of condensed tannins, and the beaver come and select. And you can see that they're very picky in which types of trees and genotypes they prefer. Similarly, with fungal endophytes that grow in the bark, we find that as condensed tannins increase, that the probability of infection by fungal endophytes also goes down. But what I've been most interested in and focusing on for the last few years is thinking about this, the effects of these condensed tannins on processes like leaf litter decomposition and nitrogen cycling as mediated through the microbial community. And so these are a couple of papers showing you some of these strong effects of this variation in condensed tannins on leaf litter decomposition. And this shows you in 2 different environments. And so whether these leaf litters from Fremont cottonwood, from F1 hybrids, back crosses, and narrow leaf that are collected from a common environment, whether they were decomposed in a stream, which is the top panel, or they were decomposed terrestrial, the bottom panel, as condensed tannin concentration goes up, or the ratio of condensed tannin to nitrogen goes up, rates of decomposition greatly slow down. Moreover, when we go to the field sites and we've identified 4 different populations or stands of cottonwoods that are dominated by either Fremont cottonwoods, narrowleaf cottonwoods, or that in that intermediate hybrid zone where you have both species as well as the hybrids, we see that the nitrogen transformation rates vary really strongly. And so again, if you, the top panel is field net nitrogen mineralization and the bottom panel is net nitrification. And you can see that if you, the soils that are in the Fremont zone tend to have very high rates of mineralization and nitrification. But in the narrow leaf zone and the hybrid zone, those patterns are much lower. And if we look at this a little more specifically here, where each symbol is a particular population or stand in the field of those 12, as we look at, as condensed tannin inputs go up, the relative net nitrogen mineralization rates go down. And so how we measured condensed tannin inputs was by, for several years, looking at the amount of litter fall that hit the ground in each of these sites, then quantifying the condensed tannin content that was in all of these, and you could do these calculations to figure out how much tannin was actually hitting the ground from the leaf litter. And we can see that there is a negative relationship there. Another postdoc in our lab a couple of years ago came through, his name is Paul Selmans, and he was interested in thinking about nitrification and this very specific group of microbes that are capable of doing nitrification. And so he went back to these same 12 sites that I just showed you, looked at potential net nitrification or potential nitrification, and found that as condensed tannins in the foliage go up in the soils beneath those trees, that nitrification goes down. And moreover, he was interested in looking at gene copies of the guys that were responsible for doing the nitrification. And so he was looking at MOA genes, so these are ammonia oxidizers that are found in bacteria, and most recently they've been found to occur in archaea. And so he's found that as condensed tannins go up, that the gene copies or the abundance of archaeal MOA genes and bacterial MOA genes declines. And you can see that there is sort of a hump-shaped distribution when we think about this at the bacterial stage. And so then having seen these ideas in the field, or seeing these patterns in terms of decomposition and nutrient transformations, we were interested if this is going to have any sort of legacy effect or any fitness consequences for the trees that produce those. And so one way to do this really easily is to do these reciprocal feedback types of experiments, where we collect soils from these different areas and you collect seeds and then plant them reciprocally and see how they perform. And so we did that with, I had a student who did this a couple of years ago, and this paper is now in press, where she collected seedlings of seeds from Populus angustifolia only, and planted them reciprocally into seeds that were field collected that were dominated by P. fremontii, hybrid zones, and P. angustifolia. And you can see from the panel on the left that mortality was much higher for narrowleaf cottonwood when they were grown in Fremont soils. If you look at the performance measures, which are on the right, this might be a little difficult to see, but the top panel is leaf biomass, and then height, leaf length, and then, here it is, leaf length, and then the number of leaves. Basically, you can just focus on the far right panel, which is Populus narrowleaf cottonwood seedlings growing in narrowleaf soils. And you can see that they perform in almost every incidence. They perform much better, so their mortality is lower, and they perform better in their own soils, indicating this home field advantage or positive feedback. And so looking at this at the stand level, then we decided to, we have the existence of common gardens that are about 20 years old, where we have known genotypes that are in replicate and that are grown in these random environments. And so this is one of the low elevation common gardens, and we were interested in looking at the specific effects at the individual genotype level. And so the top panel shows you 10 different genotypes and their replicates and the microbial community that's associated with those trees and the soils immediately beneath them. And so this was the microbial community as measured by a phospholipid fatty acids. These fatty acids, they're common to particular taxa. And this is an NMDS ordination showing you the community composition or the similarity of the microbial community. And so each symbol represents an individual tree, and each color represents an individual genotype. And what this figure indicates is that symbols that are close in ordination space have similar microbial communities, and symbols that are far away in space have dissimilar communities. And so this indicates microbial communities were very similar, and they're very genotype specific, but there is variation from genotype to genotype. When we take the x-axis of this and regress this against foliar condensed tannins, we see that as tannins increase in the foliage, that the microbial community shifts. When we then looked at nutrient fluxes, so we did a series of incubations over the course of a year. This is annual rates of net nitrogen mineralization for 20 different genotypes and their replicates across this complex. And you can see that there are specific genotype level effects. And these were, I'm not showing you these data, but they were correlated with those the microbial communities and the condensed tannins that we found in the, that previous figure. And so the next question was then, we know that the environmental variation can affect the expression of condensed tannins, and so we were interested in looking at how, when environmental variation changes, if we can see any genotype by environment interactions. And so we only have five common genotypes that are with replication that are common to a common garden that is at low elevations, at intermediate elevations, and then at high elevations. And these common gardens are over 20 years old now, so they've had a long time to condition the soils beneath them. And we see that the panel on the left shows condensed tannins in the leaf tissue, and then the panel on the right shows condensed tannins on in the root tissue. And we can see that if we'll focus on the left, for the leaf tissue, that there are strong garden effects. We should expect this. This was about a 1,000-meter elevational change from the high-elevation garden to the low-elevation garden, so really big differences. And we should expect that tannins change. There's a marginal effect of genotype, and but no effect of genotype by environment in terms of interactions there on foliar condensed tannins. When we look at roots, however, we see that there again there's a strong garden effect, a strong environmental component, but there's also a strong genotype effect and a genotype by environment interaction. And so there's definitely some interesting things going on in thinking about the different tissue types, even of the same plant, and how this then reflects on nutrient dynamics is something that a student is working on right now. The interesting thing to note here is the relative difference in terms of tannins in the roots and in the leaf foliage. You can see that it's just a fraction of what occurs in the roots occurs in the leaves. And what Clara has found so far in looking at carbon and nitrogen dynamics, she's in the process of doing a series of incubations to understand mineralization and nitrification rates, but she's just looking at total nitrogen and total organic carbon. Again, if you focus on the top panel, which is nitrogen, she finds a strong genotype effect, a strong environment effect, but no G by E interaction in terms of total nitrogen. When we look at carbon, it's a little bit different. There's a marginal effect of genotype, strong environment effect, and a G by E interaction. And so it'll be exciting to see in the coming months how these data play out and what these relationships mean. But we're interested in the fitness feedbacks of these genotypic differences that we do see. And so we did a similar type of experiment that I showed you earlier at the population level, but this is at the genotype level, where we collected soils from beneath five different genotypes of narrowleaf cottonwood alone, and then collected seeds from each of those and reciprocally planted all seeds into all soil types. And this figure is a little bit complex, but if you look at the left y-axis, that's seedling survival. And you can see that overall, that seedlings that were planted in their maternal soil survived 40% more than if they were growing in another genotype soil. And then we also looked at a number of performance measurements, such as the number of leaves, leaf length, leaf size, height. And we found that, again, the performance was higher in the maternal soil over the foreign soil. And because these were half siblings, we could calculate the Narasin's heritability. And the interesting thing that we found was there was more genetic variation in the maternal soils than in when they were growing in any other genotype. And so we see this positive feedback that maintains genetic variation, which is sort of a surprising result. So I've demonstrated that genetic variation at both the population level and at the genotype level can have very specific effects on litter and root chemistry that can affect community responses, and ecosystem responses, and even feedback to fitness of the plants that produce those traits. The implications being that this quantitative variation, and perhaps qualitative, but we don't really have any way of teasing these apart right now. We haven't begun these experiments to test these two, the difference between these two things. But they are an important link between microbial communities and ecosystem level processes, and that the feedbacks to fitness that we've demonstrated at two levels indicate that there is strong evolutionary potential, such that as if natural selection acts on plant traits, may also result in changes to these ecosystem level processes. And so I've given you just sort of this broad brush stroke of some of the patterns that we've seen. But we do have ongoing studies to try to understand a little bit more of the details and understand the mechanisms of these interactions by using purified tannin manipulations, which Nathan here is demonstrating in some of his plants that he's been adding high and low amounts of condensed tannins to see how that affects genotypes and their performance and community and ecosystem consequences. Studies to think about the differences between qualitative and quantitative variation in these guys, and as well as understanding manipulative incubations to look at condensed tannin actions on enzyme activities. And a lot of our molecular genetic colleagues are trying to think about ways, since we're being able to fine-tune some of the regions of the genome that may be responsible for condensed tannin expression, trying to figure out some ways to do some tannin knockout experiments on genetically modified plants. So again, I'd like to thank some of my collaborators and funding from the National Science Foundation, and take your questions if I have time. Thanks.